This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
Answer me this. How did it feel?
I love my mother.
That's not what I asked, dearie. How did it feel to use magic?
It doesn't matter. I'll never use it again.
Why not?
Because I loved it.
Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. And today I'm so excited to talk about episode 2 of season 2. It is a great episode with plenty of themes. I hope we can keep this within the boundaries of 1 hour. That's what we're striving for. But hopefully the other co-hosts can help me watch the time. And today we have our three regulars. Well, actually, we have four regulars, of course. But Shelley, unfortunately, cannot join her. But her sister can. Lisa, how are you doing?
I'm good.
It's good to have you on the show. And I hope that you will also convey every thought of your sister as well. Because I know that you guys are talking about the show all the time.
Usually she sends me long emails after every episode or calls me on the phone and we talk about it.
So really, channel your sister as well into this podcast. And we will try to find a common time when we can have her back on the show as well. But hey, you know, she has a life and a job. And so sometimes that gets in the way. Also joining us today, Deborah Shaben. Hey, Deborah.
Hi, Father.
Now, someone told me that you are actually following in the footsteps of Snow and Emma, and you just stepped into a hat, and now you magically appeared in some other part of the world. Where are you currently?
I am in Tempe, Arizona today.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, I have my little hat. It's called a Chevy.
Right. Well, I'm glad that Skype is doing all the magic for us so that we can connect wherever you are and no matter what time zone you're in. At least David is still where he used to be. Hey, David.
More or less. Hey, Father.
It's good to have you on the show as well. So we are going to skip the recap just like we did last week and talk immediately about the big talking points in this episode. And this time there wasn't one particular fairy tale central to the story, but instead we got a lot of awesome themes, and I can't wait to hear your take on all these big narrative threads that are being kind of like introduced. And I've got the feeling that a lot that was in this second episode is going to have implications for the rest of the season and perhaps for the entire series, because they're fundamental themes. Starting with the line, the big line. We knew that there was this kind of invisible boundary, and if people wanted to try to leave Storybrooke, they couldn't. I mean, their car would break down or they would have an accident or they would just disappear. But now we actually see that there is a true boundary, and they even trace it on the road itself with what, purple paint or something like that?
I thought it was orange paint.
Oh, it was orange. Mm-hmm. But I never thought that it was, you know, a matter of inches. And so they push this poor Sneezy over the line and he loses his memory. He loses his mind, and he gets kind of, there is this envelope of this strange blue glow around him. And he just returns to the state that he had before the spell was broken. So what do you all think of this whole idea? Wasn't the spell broken? Why is this still in place? Any ideas?
This
multiple. Oh,
go ahead, Dave.
Okay,
I will just designate Dave. You start, okay. Dave. You've got 2 minutes.
Well, the first thing that popped into my mind is, you know, is the curse really broken? Because at the end of season one, did they really break the curse, or are the prisoners now are the prisoners just now aware of their cage? Is my question. It's kind of a just kind of. I got a little. Maybe that's a little too deep, but I'm like, okay. So everyone is just aware that they're in prison now. So it's like, ouch.
So that would be part of the awakening. It's not just remembering who you are or who you were, but it's also awakening to the reality of the fact that you're stuck here.
Yes.
I like that. That's an interesting theory, actually. Deborah, what's your idea?
Well, no, I just think that there's so many curses. It's like, okay, well, We did the memory erase, the boundary. What else can we do? You know, and there's a, there's probably going to be, you know, five more curses that they're going to be like, oh, you can't do this. Oh, wait, we can't do that.
That's kind of what I, the feeling that I had as well is, well, you know, the it's not that the this one curse contained everything that was wrong. There are multiple things that need fixing, and this was a different, probably a different curse. What's your take, Lisa?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's which way it is. If it's a new curse as a part of what Gold did, or if this. It would be a nice twist, though, wouldn't it, for the curse not really to be broken? Because they're all excited and woohoo, and Emma saved us. And it would be a nice twist that it takes more than just that.
I would feel a little bit betrayed, though. I was like, yeah, that was a big payoff of the last season, and finally the spell is broken, and now it wasn't broken after all. That is a little bit like, oh, they shot JR, but he's not dead after all. It's like,
this is partially broken.
Yeah, it's partially broken, but that's still a little bit, I don't know. It's kind of cheating. But I actually think what we saw later on in the episode is, of course, that Cora, Regina's mom, casts a barrier spell. And it's pretty graphic. I mean, it's literally the trees just prevent you from escaping. And I was like, well, what if that barrier spell is still in place? And it's actually that same spell that Cora cast around the magic forest. Or is that too far-fetched?
I think it's something Regina hatched up. Hmm. I really do.
Okay. Anyway, we can talk a little bit more about the consequences of this line and why it would rob them from their previous awakened state. What I do think is that the line itself, or the boundary, or whatever your frontier, however you want to call it, this orange line, is also a symbol of a very fundamental theme in this episode, and probably also a fundamental theme for the entire series. And that is, this is all about boundaries. And about freedom versus prison, or true freedom versus external boundaries, because they all want to go over this frontier, right? They all try to cross it, and the dwarves are like eager to figure out if they can, and they find out no, they're actually, you know, they're kept within the boundaries of Storybrooke. And at the beginning of the episode, it's felt like, oh, this is a major stumbling block, and this is, you know, we're stuck. And it's a very negative experience. And everybody's afraid and even panicking. Towards the end of the episode, there seems to be a twist in this. But I do believe that this line in the sand is literally a symbol for this whole theme of you know, what is freedom? And what happens if that freedom is robbed from you, or you think it's robbed from you? So it's a barrier, but is it really? And then, of course, everybody's panicking in the town, and we see that there is some crisis management going on. And I loved seeing both the sisters, or the fairies, or what are they actually? But they're doing like this emergency help. It's like the 911 committee of Storybrooke.
Yeah, and that was cool.
It was very cool. And they have this little tent, and they're just like, yeah, anyone needs counseling? Well, here's Archie, and he will help you out. I love that role of Archie. He's like the town psychiatrist, and he's ready to help everyone with their identity crisis. I was like, he might be in it over his head, because that's a lot of work, you know? You've got an entire town and of people that, you know, are like, who am I really? And they're basically all have like split personalities or dual personalities. And isn't this also the moment where we see Mr. Whale, who is inquiring, like, so are they still like religious sisters, or can I just, you know, can I go after them?
That was funny.
But also a little bit creepy. I was like, come on. Dude,
it fit with what his personality is so far.
Oh, yeah.
He's a predator, really. Didn't he hit on Emma before, or he did hit on someone?
He hit on Mary. Well, he went out with Mary Margaret. He hit on Emma. He's hit on Ruby.
Multiple times.
True. Yeah. So does it give us any clues about his true identity or his fairy tale identity? I was like, is there
I think he's going to be from Peter Pan. I really do. Yeah. And he could be, you know, a monstro. He could be, you know, if
literally Jimmy, a predator.
Yeah, yeah, literally a predator. Exactly. But
I like that idea. I like it that he would be the crocodile.
Oh, he could be the crocodile.
Why not?
Ooh, yeah, good call.
Aww. Nobody would guess that, you know. But I also like, who said that the other time, that he would be part of the undersea world of the Little Mermaid? And so that would make his remark about, you know, you are not my prince would make sense because you've got this undersea hierarchy, and Prince Charming is not part of that. So that I like that idea as well.
But yeah, he could be that, or he could also be his. If we're talking Neverland, his prince would be actually, in a sense, Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm.
Or Princess Haya, was it Hiawatha or Haya?
Tiger Lily.
Tiger Lily. Yeah. What's her name? Yeah.
Hmm.
I think it was Tiger Lily.
Yeah. But I do believe that this was a clue again. And then once we discover who he truly is, we're like, of course, it was right under our noses. He could be Bond, James Bond, in terms of womanizing. But I don't think that Disney has that, or ABC does have that franchise. But who knows? We already have a James, of course, our prince.
Unless he's a Cheshire Cat hit was a womanizer. He kind of has the same... He has kind of the same goofy smile, but anyway.
I don't know. If it's just a smile, I think it's not enough to make the link. But anyway, it's certainly a clue, and it was funny at the moment. But I did like the... who said that? We don't know, actually. Are they religious sisters, or are they fairies? And they're a bit of both, you know? It's not that one identity erases the other one, which, as a Catholic priest, makes me happy. It was like, at least we've got some, you know, religious people in this series. I just don't know how they're going to reconcile this fairy dust and the prayers, but I guess it's, you know, one might be the metaphor of the other. Who knows? I love the way that they want to help out, and they are immediately, and that kind of is both their role as fairies is to help out, and but also their role as religious sisters is to, you know, to serve other people and to, you know, try to help where they can. And then we move from that to the first big theme, Prince Charming confronting Regina. And there's this discussion about Regina not being able to leave her house. And he's like, if you go outside, they'll kill you. And yeah, you're not as powerful as you think. You don't have magic yet, or at least you don't know how to control it yet. Which I think is true, because we've seen that she was able to conjure up these branches, right, to capture Prince Charming, but it didn't last, and it was she's not as powerful as she used to be. And then later on in the episode, we see her kind of meddling with that candle, and it's not that she's unable to do anything; it's just she's not able to control it. There is magic; she does have a little bit of a grasp on it, but she doesn't master it yet. For me, the big theme that is introduced here is this imprisonment. Regina is basically imprisoned in her own house. And that's a theme that will recur later on in the situation in the flashback with her mom, where she's basically a prisoner of her mom, of Cora. And then she tries to capture Henry. And then Henry is like, you're basically, you know, making me a prisoner. And so very, very important theme. And of course, has a lot to do with the theme of freedom and what is true freedom and how can you be truly free. What do you all think of Regina in this episode? How she behaves? Is she genuine? Is there... You know, I felt that we see like so many different sides of Regina in this one episode alone.
I thought she was struggling. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, struggling with the self we saw before, you know, the more innocent before she became evil and had power. And the way she is now that she, well, and watching the flashbacks with her mother, that she struggles for her son. And she sees the love of Henry and wants to be right by him, but is really struggles with it.
Yeah. I think we see a lot of kind of condensed character development in this episode. We've already seen the gentle side of Regina, but we never really saw how a kind person, "Well, you're so kind," says Rumpelstiltskin at one point, can turn to evil, and how that happened and why. And then for the first time, we're introduced to this whole idea of what I've hoped for a long time is this beginning, this trace of, you know, a desire for redemption. And this is the first time that you see a glimpse of at least her conscience working again a little bit, but not enough. But we'll talk about that later. But I thought this is definitely a Regina-themed episode. She's the main character of this particular episode. And I think the acting was great. And I totally believed her when she was still, you know, the kind Regina. I thought it was some great acting there. But she is, yeah, she's struggling. What you see in this conversation with Prince Charming, and there was this amazing quote where she's like, "Well, you know, once I'll have my magic back, I'll have my son back."
"Right now, I don't have magic and I don't have my son. But when I get one, I get the other. And you don't want to be around when that happens."
"If you have to use magic to keep your son, you don't really have him."
It's this idea that you cannot force someone to love you. The only thing you can do is imprison someone, or, you know, abduct someone, or taking someone hostage. But there is one thing that magic doesn't have power over, and that is love. And you can never force that, and you cannot take away someone's freedom. And I think that is a fantastic theme. And it I think it's a key theme when it comes to this whole understanding of what is magic in this world, in this story, and what is the difference with love, and how powerful is magic ultimately, and how powerful are the people that yield magic. You know, it's this whole idea of, where is magic evil in itself, or does it depend on how you use it? Is it ultimately a question of your intentions and the choices that you make? Which brings me to the big, you know, the next theme. It's the whole theme of seduction. And we have a couple of seducers. It starts with Cora, isn't it? We see this interaction between Cora and Regina, and she is like, "I don't want you to leave because you need to marry this dude, and then you know, he's weak, so then we'll take over." But she's literally using this barrier spell to imprison her daughter, and then she's like, "You know, you just need magic, and that the power is the road to freedom." That's literally what she says. So what about Cora? What are your thoughts about her role in this story, David?
Well, obviously she was a big motivating factor, but I'm struggling to think of the examples, but you know, you've heard of this before, where when you struggle, the more you struggle against someone, the more like them you become.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's. I mean, she. Whether Regina knew, realized it or not, her own mother kind of molded her. You know, molded her into her own form.
Yeah, she definitely recognizes things in herself, in Regina, that are the same with Cora.
And I mean, she does the same. She does the exact same thing with Henry, and she's done that for his entire life.
Yeah. It's power play, literally. It's like, "I will show you how to, you know, be just like me, and then you'll have power and you'll be happy." But the thing is, you discover that these people are not really happy. They're just power. Their hunger for power only creates more desire for power and magic. And you're never done once you go down that road. What I was kind of intrigued by is that at first we see that Regina does not want to become like Cora, her mother. But what I wondered is, how did Cora became this evil? What is her motivation to be this evil? Because we always see that there is a price involved. You know, magic comes with a price, and those the people that use magic have paid a price. So What do you all think is Korra's story? Any ideas about? I'm pretty sure that we will at one point learn about that. But do we have any clues why Korra is evil?
I think she's the Miller's daughter for Rumpelstiltskin. Did you hear? I mean, one of the big clues is when Rumpel was talking to Regina and said, "You know, I held you when you were a baby."
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Are you familiar with the? Did we ever talk about the Rumpel's backstory or the original?
I think I'll refresh my memory. I do, now that you mention it, like the Miller's daughter, but I don't have the details.
And she was supposed to, you know, spin, you know, gold into, yarn into gold for the king, right?
Yeah.
And then, and she couldn't do it, so she made a deal with Rumpel to give her, or give up her firstborn child.
Oh, that's it. Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. Of course, that must be it.
So she could be.
Did we ever see that in the series? No,
not yet. Seen. But you know the idea when Rumpel's like, "I held you when you were a baby." I'm like, "Oh, yes."
You're totally right. That's it.
Yeah, she could be. The child that Rumpelstiltskin was going to take away.
Of course. So again, it's like Korra seduced by, you know, by Rumpel to use magic to solve a problem, is giving up her daughter, and that's when she goes down the slippery slope, and we get to know her the moment that she's already completely corrupted by that. I love that. So, yeah, and then Daniel in the chat room says, "You were more portable back then when you were still a baby." Could also indicate that Rumpel at one point took her away. And then perhaps there was another bargain, you know, so that Korra tried to get her back. And that might also explain why Korra is so adamant at keeping her in her power. She doesn't want to lose her daughter again. Don't you think? That got to totally make sense. So this whole, like, I imprison you because I don't want to lose you. It's ultimately, it's not a power play. It's fear. It's the fear of losing your child. Which is, by the way, another huge theme of this episode. It's like anyone who uses magic, it ends up by losing what is most dear to them, and that's their child. It happens to Rumpel. He falls for the seduction of using magic for his own selfish needs and ends up losing his son. It happens to, probably happened to Korra. Happens to Regina. Because she uses magic and she ends up losing Henry in the process. So it is, and I keep thinking that it's ultimately not because of the magic, but it's because of the fact that people use magic to solve short-term problems instead of like letting things play out and having patience and you know, the virtue basically of respecting people's freedom. Instead, they use magic to get it here and now. And there's this great scene in the pawn shop between Rumpelstiltskin and Regina. And Regina is like, I need power. I need magic. And Rumpel is, well, you know, just have some patience. And it might just come by itself. And Regina is like, I want it here and now. Give me the book. So it's this fear of waiting. It's this fear of letting things play out. And she wants control. She literally wants to be in charge. And if you do that, you end up losing instead of gaining. So it's this whole, and this is a very Christian theme, I think. It's that ultimately you can only gain by losing. It's one of the major teachings of Jesus where he's like, if you want to win your life, you gotta be ready to lose it. And it's those that are trying to win their life and to gain, they will end up losing everything. And it's this whole theme of, you know, what use it is to gain the world if you end up losing your soul. And in this world, it's like, what use it is it to be the most powerful magic wielder of the enchanted forest if you end up losing your child and to lose love in your life? And so, and the reaction is kind of this knee-jerk reaction. It's not conversion, but it is, well, in case of Rumpelstiltskin, it's like, I need more power. I need more magic. I need to have more control. Because, and it's, I think it's always going to fail. Because it's not about magic. It's about, you know, what's your mindset? What are you truly looking for? And what are you ready to sacrifice? And go ahead, David.
I would say I think Rumpel's definitely learned that lesson now in this episode. Maybe that's what he's trying to tell Regina in a subtle way. Because, I mean, obviously he still can do some magic because he conjured that book out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So he can still work magic, but the main thing he wants to do is evidently leave, and he can't.
Yeah, that was a nice little piece of acting there.
Yeah, when he goes to the line in the sand, and then he's like so frustrated that he can't cross it because he will lose his memory as well.
Because that seems like they haven't said it outright, but it seems like that's been in his entire plan this entire time, just so he can leave, and he can't.
Well, he wants to find his son. I think that's
exactly
it. When Regina says, it feels like you have another plan, and it doesn't involve going back to the Enchanted Forest, I think it's clear that the only thing he cares about is to be with his son, and he doesn't care whether that's in the Enchanted Forest or in our world. And he can't. He too is limited.
Sorry.
Well, and what does he always say about all magic comes with a price?
Mm-hmm.
Would that be the price that he needs to pay? It's basically giving up his son, losing his son.
Yeah.
He did it allegedly to help find his son, and then he can't get out to get him.
You know what intrigues me as a meta theme as well is what is ultimately the origin of all this evil? Because you always think you got to figure it out. You know, at first it's Regina, she's evil. And then you discover, well, wait a minute. No, there's this Rumpelstiltskin. He's more evil than Regina. And he seduced Regina. And then you're like, well, no, wait, there is this Cora. And she is really, truly evil. And then you're like, well, wait a minute. No, actually in this episode we discovered that before Cora was evil, Rumpelstiltskin was already evil, and he was the one that brought her this book of spells, right? Don't they imply that he was the one who actually turned Cora to evil?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then, she said it was the name in the back of the book,
and then the name is Rumpelstiltskin, and then Regina is like, okay, I need to talk to this guy. But the thing is that Rumpelstiltskin does always come across as the kind of the archetype of the devil, right? He's the seducer. He's the snake in the paradise, and even the way that he presents things, he's the ultimate seducer. He presents a choice. It's like, oh, but it's all up to you. If you don't want to become like your mother, that's totally your choice, you know. But at the same time, he does present the choice. You can choose magic or you can wait. But at the same time, he knows that the other party that he deals with is very weak and has flaws and is very vulnerable. And it's in that vulnerability that he presents this choice, knowing very well that most people will turn to magic, which will corrupt them ultimately. Because it's the easy, it's the broad way. You know, it's kind of the choice between the narrow path and the white path or the
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the conundrum. It's the thing that he presents. It's like, well, okay, well, yeah, there's this difficult road and you're totally free to choose it, but here's magic and it could fix it in a minute. And then most people are like Regina. It's like, oh yeah, give it to me now. I want to have it right now. But then that comes with a price. Whereas if you take the narrow path, that too comes with a price, but that price is basically, it's your own life. It's sacrifice. That is going to be the price. Whereas if you choose magic, the price is ultimately someone else who's got to pay that price. It's the child that's going to pay that price. It's the town that's going to, it's fairy tale world that's going to pay that price.
And just that, Rumpelstiltskin is so good at what he does about exploiting people's weaknesses, because it's pretty evident that he's one of the weakest, most flawed people in this entire storyline, because he, even though he keeps like taunting everyone, saying like, you know, like, well, you could do this, you could do this, he makes the worst choices of everyone constantly.
Yeah.
Always. And he keeps doing it, even like, okay, the curse is broken, you can be with Belle. And you go bring magic back, and here we go again. So.
Yes. Well, and that's so interesting. The whole character of of Rumpelstiltskin. And I think this, we'll see how deep the rabbit hole goes, literally, because, you know, what is the nature of evil? And what is the origin and the source of evil? You have a lot of philosophies where it's basically, it's either you've got a source for good and you've got a source for evil, right? You've got yin and yang. You've got the dark side, Emperor Darth Vader, and you've got the light side, and it's Luke Skywalker and Yoda. Undecided you are. The thing is, in this story, this particular story, it seems like there is definitely a source of good and love, but for evil, there is not truly a source. Evil, ultimately, even if you go to the quintessential archetypical seducer slash demon, Rumpel, even in his case, he was a good person to begin with. He was a nice guy. And then he chose to be evil. And so I think what this story suggests is that, at least in the world of Once Upon a Time, evil is not a thing. It's not, it is a choice. And if you make that choice, you are perpetuating something that came before you. And in turn, you will seduce other people to fall with you. And so that's why he starts with Korra. And then Korra falls and starts to use magic for her own selfish purposes. Even though even the selfishness starts off like something that might be good. She just wants to, you know, get out of a tricky situation. She falls for this seduction of easy magic. And then she passes that on to Regina. And Regina tries to pass it on to Henry. It's like, you can have all the friends you want. If only, you know, I can teach you a little bit of magic. And Henry is the first. That's why I think he's a kind of a messiah archetype. Henry is the first one who doesn't fall for it.
Henry, you can know all the secrets. You can live in a house with magic. You can have all the friends you want come over anytime, and you can show them everything in your book.
No one's gonna want to come over here. They're scared of you.
You can make them love you.
I don't want that. I don't want to be you.
What I thought was amazing and brilliant of this episode is that actually manages to break through the walls of Regina. And it's the first time that she realizes, well, wait a second. Magic cannot solve all my problems because I cannot force anyone to love me.
Henry, you're going to go home with David.
Really?
Really. I shouldn't have brought you here. I don't know how to love very well. I wasn't capable of it for a very long time, but I know, I remember that if you hold on to someone too hard, that doesn't make them love you. I'm sorry I lied to you, that it made you feel like I didn't know who you are. But I want you to be here because you want to be here, not because I forced you. Because of magic. I want to redeem myself.
But the question is, of course, can she? And can you redeem yourself? Or do you need someone else to redeem you? And I think that Henry, ultimately, is the redeemer in this case. And he's slowly bringing her back. But she still thinks that she can do it herself, right? And she's like, oh, I'm going to burn this evil book of spells. And then, again, what a great, great scene where she's like ready to throw it in the fire. And then she's like, I would just keep it around. You know, I'm not going to use it, but it's just to be easy. I'll just put it in a cupboard. You know, I'm not never, never, ever going back to that. I was like, oh, yeah, I know that mechanism. If you've, you know, heard Confessions and you're going to confession yourself, you totally know what she's doing there, because that's exactly what we do all the time. It's like, oh, I'm not going to fall for that again. And then it's like, eh. It's so difficult to break the bonds with, you know, that tendency to sin or to do evil, because it's so easy and it feels so, you know, it's kind of nice to have that alternative just at, you know, in reach. But the fact is, if you don't completely sever the bond or your ties with evil, you're making yourself unnecessarily vulnerable. It's like someone who's on a diet and he's like, oh, I'm not going to throw that chocolate in the garbage can. That would be so, you know, that would be such a sin to do that. That would be really, you know, I can't do that.
I do that with Halloween candy.
Yeah, I'll just store it for the kids. I won't touch it. I'm strong enough. And then it's like the kids are in school and there's like this voice like, ooh, little dearie, you remember all those candies and sit right in the cupboard. Oh, just one. What? Just one little piece of chocolate, you know. It's not going to ruin it. It's not going to make you gain so much weight, dude. You're in control. You know, it's all up to you. It's like, oh, I love that you see this mechanism played out in the fairy tale world like that, because it's ultimately so human and so recognizable. So what do you all think? Is Regina going to redeem herself?
I think that's where they're leading us. That especially after this episode, to see her go from doing exactly what her mother did. You know, she went down that path and then locking Henry up in his room. And she even had the tree come out and grab him, just like her mother had the tree come grab her. Yet you saw it. You can't. She told her mother, you can't force me to love you. And Henry told her that.
Exactly the same, yes.
I love that then she, when Charming, you know, comes in with his big sword, and she said he can go with you. And I thought that was a good moment for her. So maybe it might not be right away, but they're showing that she does still have, she's fighting it.
Some people on the internet were skeptical. They were like, she's just playing it. It's not, you know, she's just faking it. She has this evil master plan. Or do you think it's genuine?
Always thought her love for Henry was genuine as far as she knows how to give it.
That's a good one. That's an important distinction, as far as she knows. And she says it at one point, and again, I thought it was a beautiful moment where she's like, I guess I just don't know very well how to love, because she has not been loved herself. And so you kind of forget what love is. And that the stable boy is so far away in her memory. But in a way, Henry kind of awakens that and functions almost as her conscience, or awakens her conscience, which at first, and that's another brilliant moment. This episode is so good. She literally refuses help from what's his name?
Jiminy.
Jiminy Cricket. She refuses counseling. I know exactly who I am. And so she. And by that she means, I know that I'm the evil queen, you know, I'm evil. And so I choose that. And it's as if she literally tries to push away the good in her, which I think ultimately is what the title of the episode, you know, We Are Both, or what was the title? Something like
We Are Both. Yeah,
We Are Both. That's what it refers to. It's, do you really embrace both sides of who you are, both the good that is in you and the tendency for evil, or do you just choose one and you try to suppress the other side of you, and do you really want to look in the mirror and accept the consequences of who you truly are? And Regina, at first, she's like, there is no way in the world that I am going to let my conscience function, because conscience leads us to the good in us. That's what the conscience does. It's like a compass. So ultimately, I think God's voice points us in the right direction. And so we can choose to ignore it. And that's what she does. And we know that Jiminy Cricket, in the original story of Pinocchio, is literally a metaphor for our conscience. And he gets the task in the Disney movie to be Pinocchio's conscience, right? Because he's just a wooden boy. He has no experience yet. His conscience needs to be educated. And that's what he does. And at one point, Pinocchio decides to, you know, literally suppress his conscience and steps away, and with the, you know, he turns into a donkey as a result. And it's great to see that Regina does the same thing here by literally pushing away this offer for counseling, and that it's Henry who actually makes her remember again that one, there was a time that she wasn't totally evil and that she knew love, and it's coming back to her now. And this might be the story arc for the entire season, don't you think? Oh, maybe. Good point by Daniel in the chat room. And Daniel, by the way, is the host of the Once podcast, another great Once Upon a Time podcast that you absolutely have to check out. He says, Henry is Regina's attempt to fill the hole in her heart that the curse left. And Maleficent already warns against that. So I think that Henry is the kind of the arrow in the Achilles heel of Regina. So it looks like Regina is totally evil now and there's no way back. That's kind of what Rumpel thinks about himself as well. You know, once you start down this evil path, no matter what you try, you will always be a prisoner. And he constantly chooses to stay evil because he thinks he needs that power to get his son back. And in this, even though there is a huge parallel between Rumpel and his son and then Regina and Henry on the other side, Regina here makes a different choice, at least the beginning of a different choice. But the fact that she keeps the Book of Spells in her cupboard, that might be her undoing. Something needs, that book needs to be burned. It's like a... it's like a Horcrux, you know. As long as it's there, your soul will be divided. It needs to be destroyed. So it's actually, again, a cool theme is it's one book against the other. It's the book of the fairy tales with the happy endings that Henry has, and then it's the book of spells that the seducer has, that first Rumpel has, and now Regina has it. Cora had it before. And so it's the book of evil, and it's the book of good, of happy endings. The One Ring needs to be taken to Mount Doom. That's another great analogy. It's just one of these archetypical stories. And it needs to be destroyed, this book of evil. And it will require a deliberate, free decision to do that. Again, it's not something that you just get rid of easily. It's because it's so part of who Regina is. And she has, by her choices, this evil gets more and more hold of her. And just like in Rumpel's case, the more you meddle with evil, the more you become a prisoner and you're not free anymore, even though you have this illusion of being free and the illusion that power will bring you freedom. But it's actually, true freedom is a choice. And Henry makes this choice. He's like, I don't want that magic and I choose to be free. And then Regina is, okay, I'll let you go. I think I'm starting to understand. But of course, if she turns to the light side, and we don't have a series anymore, right? She right, needs exactly. to be evil. I mean, what if Rumpel and Regina both turn back to, you know, the good? It's over. You know, what story is there to tell? You need these antagonists to keep it interesting.
You know what I thought with Rumpel, I thought, you know, when you're talking about why he wants to leave, and I'm like, well, my initial impression was, I guess I didn't think about his son. I was thinking, oh, he wants to get away from Belle. Because ultimately, Belle kind of undoes his evilness.
Well, isn't Belle what Henry is to Regina? Belle awakens this good in him. And then there is his conscience starts to function again. And his reaction is like, let's suppress this immediately because I feel this is very scary and it makes me feel extremely vulnerable. And they don't want to be vulnerable. Regina doesn't want to be vulnerable because she felt very vulnerable when she was still under Cora's influence and power. And so it's kind of a perpetuating mechanism, but it stops with Henry. And that's why he is the Redeemer. He's like, this stops right here and now, and I'm not falling for this. But every time, it's not, and that's another cool thing about this episode. For the first time, I started to understand that Rumpelstiltskin, as powerful as he might seem, he is actually very powerless. He doesn't have power at all. That's why he is just a seducer. Remember the whole scene with the mirror?
You seek power. The death of your enemies. The death of your friend?
No. I don't want to hurt anyone.
Hard to believe you're from the same family. So kind. So gentle. So Boop. Powerful. You could do so much if you just let yourself. Magic. It can set you free.
I don't want to do that. Use magic, that's what she does. I don't want to end up like her.
But that's the beauty of my gift. You don't have to.
And but he's like, okay, I'll just give you this mirror, and it's just right there. Just unwrap it, and just a little push, you know, that's all. And then and then you've got this scene where she's actually on the verge of pushing her mom into the mirror, and then Cora senses it and ties her hands. Mm-hmm. And I think that is actually what Cora shouldn't have done. It's by imprisoning her daughter that she awakens this rage and this kind of like this anger of like, I don't want to be under your control anymore. And then Rumpelstiltskin appears in a mirror and it's like, do it, you know. And she's so mad and so angry that she just, it's like this spur of the moment decision, like, I'm going to push her into the mirror. And then again, fantastic acting. The moment she does it, she's like, what did I just do? Where did she go? And it's almost as if like there is her conscience again. It's like, what did you just do? And then Rumpelstiltskin is there, but you know, how did it feel? And he's the snake.
How did it feel to use magic?
It doesn't matter. I'll never use it again.
Why not?
Because I love.
I thought it was a very Star Wars moment. It's like,
hey, I didn't say it. I thought it. I was like, I should bring this up, but I'm not going to. But thank you, Deborah. This is totally.
Oh, that's funny.
The dark side of the Force. No, but it's this seduction. It's like, yes, mm-hmm. Luke Skywalker, feel it. Let your anger, let go. You know, let that anger flow through you. Don't you feel how powerful it makes you? And there too, at one point, Luke is like, what on earth am I doing? I'm doing exactly what I shouldn't do. And that's where he decides to throw away his lightsaber. And, you know, and then, well, anyway, that's not here. That's for another podcast.
That's a different podcast.
But it is the same story. It's exactly the same principle. And it's these fundamental themes that still work. And I loved it in Star Wars, and I love it in Once Upon a Time, because we all recognize it. These are the mechanisms that sometimes get a hold of us as well. And so the trick seems to be, like, don't fall for it. Don't let anger control you. Don't let other people control you. If you really want to be in charge of your life, you got to be in charge. You got to make your own freedom by deciding not to use magic for evil or the Force or whatever it is. And so the other thing that I loved about the whole mirror scene is you discover that Rumpel doesn't do it himself, and he actually, I don't think he ever does evil himself. He does it when it comes to his own actions, but he never is able to control someone completely. He is always the seducer. He's like, oh, just sign this contract. He makes these little sounds. But he's always waiting for someone to make the decision, him or herself, because he knows that once freedom is involved and there's a free choice, a deliberate choice, it will actually stick. He too cannot control other people, but once they do it themselves, and that's why he's ultimately so powerful, because he knows exactly when he has to come up with this business proposal. If there's a need, he can, you know, here's a choice, but I already know what you're going to choose, right? And so he makes evil just very attractive, but he cannot control other people. Which is fascinating, because he seems so powerful with all his magic, but he cannot control love and he cannot control free will. And that's why he cannot control Henry. It's why he cannot control Prince Charming. It's why he can't control a barking dog in the background. But it's just fascinating that there are limits to his power, which also, again, is symbolized, I think, by that line, that orange line, that even he cannot cross. And he seemed to be so powerful, but he can't. Ah, I love this episode. Let's see, what else have we have? Okay, yeah.
I wanted Deborah. To say when you were watching Regina in the Looking Glass, didn't you think, oh, Alice in Wonderland, that's going to totally mean that Cora is going to be the Queen of Hearts?
I did. Yeah. I thought that too.
Well, the Looking Glass was a big, big hint. So is that where she went?
No.
Okay, explain.
Oh, because the end.
The end, yeah. If you watch the last scene.
I know. That confused me as well.
Well, and I was like, well, we're not going to see Emma or Mary Margaret in this episode, which kind of made me go, hmm. And then it was the last scene where we see Mulan has captured Emma and Mary Margaret and dragging them to, you know, their hiding place, their base camp, and then, you know, throws them into the pit.
Yes.
And this is where I, you know, before we started recording the podcast, you said, oh, is there anything Disney related? And I'm like, well, there was one scene that when I watched it, it reminded me of Aladdin. And it was this last scene where, you know, Emma's the only one conscious and Mary Margaret's been knocked unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the depths of this pit, you hear this, like, do you need some help or something to that effect? And I'm like, oh, it reminds me of when Aladdin was thrown in the pit, and then you hear this voice in the darkness. Yeah, the old man, like, you're right.
That must be a reference
to
that.
Here comes Jafar, who's dressed as a beggar, out of the darkness, and... Right. You know, and it's the same thing with Cora. Here comes Cora out of the darkness in this pit, and I'm like, ooh.
Well, it kind of jives with Aladdin. I mean, it's definitely an Aladdin-type world in which they seem to be stuck, don't you think?
Yeah.
Even though it features Mulan, but this is definitely not an Asian world. It's more an Oriental world.
Well, mm-hmm. Did you love who we met when she drug her into the little town?
Who did we meet?
I watched that with y'all. I mean, that was this week, right?
Didn't
someone introduce themselves at the very end? I don't want to say it if it was a preview.
Well, it was Cora.
No, before she was thrown in the pit. The guard that came up.
It's from the preview. Okay, so don't talk about it. It's preview. It's spoiler.
Yeah, because I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah. I was also like, huh? Okay.
Because it said its person's name, and I'm sure it was the end of this.
Okay. No, don't talk about it. I have not seen that preview yet, so, but interesting. Okay. Well, I still do believe, I was confused by the ending. I was like, Cora is now in the Aladdin/Mulan world. That invalidates my theory that she's the Queen of Hearts. But let's talk about what Rumpelstiltskin says about where Cora ends up. He says, he talks about a particular annoying little world, and I have no interest in it. So I was like, that sounds more like Wonderland. You know, it's kind of annoying, and it's like he's not interested in Wonderland. So I think it's totally possible that Cora first, when she goes through the mirror, goes to Wonderland. I actually think. They can't refuse us that. They're kind of like hinting at like, oh, it's the Looking Glass. I would call it a mirror. But no, it's a Looking Glass. So it's like, yeah, that's Wonderland. Then if she's the Queen of Hearts, that is probably why she was protected when the curse hit. And she is not in Storybrooke. So she and then perhaps she found a way to move from Wonderland to Aladdin Land or however you want to call it.
Yeah.
And she's just traveling because she has a portal, don't you think?
Yeah, and it could be, you know, in Aladdin, you know, when Jafar dresses up as, you know, a prisoner, he knows the way out. So he has his own technical portal to take Aladdin to the Cave of Wonders. Oh. So maybe this is kind of a parallel kind of story where Cora knows the way out.
Or she might just have the key to the door, you know?
Yeah, it's all planned.
What did Jefferson say? I can't remember. When Charming found him and said, does it still exist? Where is it? Can you make this work? What I can't remember what he said.
It's isn't it about the Enchanted Forest?
Right. Did he say it was still there or not?
No. Actually, it's Rumpelstiltskin who says that it's still there, I think.
Yeah.
So, but that was a big revelation, because we were like last week, I was like, oh, perhaps it is gone. Perhaps only the other doors are left. But now we hear that, no, the Enchanted Forest is actually there. That's actually why the dwarves go out on this mission with their, like, hi-ho little moment.
Yeah,
it's like, let's go get some fairy dust, because the fairies have said, you know, we can only make another portal if we have fairy dust. We don't even have that. So there's like, okay, let's fix that.
Well, I love it. They say, where are you going? And they're saying, to do what we do. I
mean, yeah. Off to work we go. Off to work
Actually,
we go.
I love that scene where Charming stood up at the town line and, you know, said, you know what? We have to go back to work. We're going to open Granny's. We're going to rebuild your homes, you know, and just do what we do and embrace both sides of you.
He said, I
don't want to forget David. I don't want to be David. I don't want to be Charming, but I have to bring the best of both of them.
Absolutely.
That was a really powerful moment.
That's a great story arc that we haven't talked about yet. It's this whole, you know, Prince Charming who is going back and forth between the John Doe character who doesn't have a clue and is indecisive and he just is unsure of himself. And then Prince Charming is supposed to be the hero. He's supposed to be the leader. And then I love the way that he is at one point he realizes that, you know, there is actually much more of the John Doe in me than I first wanted to admit. And I don't know what my plan is. And he said that, but I hope I can make it up in the next 2 hours. And he can't. And then at one point, he too is confronted with a choice, like many of the characters in this episode. And here it's the choice between his impulse to go after Emma and Snow. And then he's halted by Little Red Riding Hood. And she's like, well, you can't go after Emma and Snow. You got to be here. The town is going to crumble and it's going to fall apart if you don't take up your responsibility or your vocation as a leader. You got to be Prince Charming here for us. And I love that he is actually choosing his vocation over his, you know, his family. It's like, I need to be a leader here and I cannot leave these people. And I think it's a very heroic thing to do, a very fairy tale thing to do here. Mm-hmm. But it must be a huge sacrifice for him to not go after this impulse of, you know, he too lost Emma. And just like all the other, just like Cora, just like Regina, just like Rumpelstiltskin, his first temptation is to, I want her back. And I am going to use whatever means possible, potentially even magic, to get them back. And he too, just like Henry, and in that respect, Henry is just like his grandpa. He chooses, no, I'm going to stick here with these people. And then he has this great, like, rousing President of the United States type of speech at the frontier is like, and this is our Independence Day thing, where it's like, you know, we got to embrace who we truly are. And what I loved about that is it brings the entire episode together. It's like, ultimately, this boundary, this orange frontier is not keeping us prisoners. We gotta build our own freedom, and we gotta go back, and we gotta embrace who we are, and start rebuilding this town. And I thought it was fantastic. You see this completely destroyed town that is in total ruins, and they start building it up again. And I think we hear David in the background, but he's on a conference call.
I'm wondering if it involved.
are you back, David, or are you still on a conference call? I think David does not know.
Sorry, some muting issues there.
Oh,
sorry,
okay.
Yeah, and I was trying to mute too with all of my dogs and trucks and.
No, that's no problem. It's all part of the kind of the messy space in which we live. We got to embrace both sides. Now, David has to embrace both his conference call and the Skype call about Once Upon a Time. No problem. And then you see this moment is almost kind of like an A-team moment where everybody is like rolling up their sleeves and let's rebuild this town. And everybody takes responsibility again, just like Prince Charming has just done. He like, I am responsible and I cannot just go after my impulses here. I need to be responsible. And then the entire town shows us as viewers that ultimately if you are true freedom depends on the choices that you make. And if you want to be free, even if you can't leave Storybrooke, it just you just need to act like free people. And that's what they do. And I love that because it's, again, it's such a fundamental human theme. We always blame our misery on other people. It's like, oh, if only the government, if only the next president would, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas, you know, it's ultimately, it's not a president that is going to make everything right in the future. It's not your job that has to be totally different for you to be happy. It's what you do in the given situation. And you've got people that are ill or handicapped and they can never even leave their homes. And yet some of these people can be so free. And I remember parishioners of mine, and it's just like they're on their deathbed and they've been given up. And you're like, your first impulse is to pity them. It's like, oh my goodness, your world is now so small. And sometimes these people discover true freedom and strength in that very limited situation, because it ultimately is about, you know, what is my attitude in this given situation? And it depends on me. And I can waste my time blaming it on other people, but I cannot control other people and I cannot control the circumstances of my life, but I can control how I behave in this situation. And that to me is the big message of this second episode. And I think it's amazingly important. Let's talk about the end.
Okay.
'Cause there are still a few things that are set up here. Let's call them open threads or unanswered questions. And I'd like to do a tour of our panel and see what you think about these. Okay, so what are the questions that we are left with? Well, we've already talked about this one. Regina says, I want to redeem myself. Do you think she is going to succeed, or does she need someone else? And if so, who is going to redeem her?
Oh, I think only Henry can redeem her.
And he already started that in a way.
Yeah. Because, I mean, she's already resistant to Mary Margaret and to, you know, it could be possible that Mary Margaret could be, you know, somebody who's a redeemer for her, too. Because, you know, obviously they have this really strange bond of, you know, of what happened in Mary Margaret's childhood.
Mm-hmm. In a way, yeah, good point in the chat room. Someone says, you know, it's not only Henry, but also Snow probably will try to redeem her. And we've seen that Snow is extremely forgiven, even though she was almost like strangled in this episode, at least virtually in Regina's dreams. But she,
it's interesting that, you know, Mary or Snow was unconscious when Cora arrived in this last scene. So, you know, Cora has, or, you know, Mary Margaret Snow has not recognize who Cora is yet.
Yes.
So that'll be an interesting, we'll see if
true, of course, yeah, she will be like, oh, but you are the evil well, mom
and
that betrayed
that's
me.
Interesting, because we haven't really crossed that path yet, because it hasn't been revealed to the young Snow that Cora is evil.
Oh, you know what I'm thinking? Could one of the story threats be that Cora, that first Snow will be like, you're Cora, you are, you know, the source of all evil, and that Cora will end up corrupting Snow, and that Emma will have to redeem her mother? How cool would that be?
Oh, no.
That would be Henry. Henry trying to redeem Regina, Emma trying to redeem Snow, Regina trying to redeem Cora. Who's going to redeem Rumpel? His
Belle.
Son?
I'm going to hold out for Balefire on that one.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
When he finally gets here.
Speaking of people that need to get back into the story, what is this deal with Pinocchio? We see him in the beginning of the episode, very briefly, and he's like this wooden puppet, and I think he just managed to frown.
But he's blinking, so he's
He's blinking, yeah. So he's awake, but he's still, you know, this wooden boy. And then at the end, again, it's all about Pinocchio. Where's Pinocchio? Where's my son? And then, you know, the Pinocchio's gone. Where did he go?
Yeah.
What happened there?
Well, he can't leave.
I'm going to assume that he's not wood anymore. But
no, he's wood. I think he's wood because
he's
the spell.
Wood?
yeah, the spell's broken, but he can't leave because if he leaves, he's back to being back August. To being August.
He's wood.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Well, that's true. Will we have a whole Pinocchio storyline with how does he get to be a real boy again?
Yeah.
I mean, is he stuck as a wood Pinocchio?
Or are they going to use a fully digital character walking around for an entire episode? That's going to be very expensive. Or will they just come up with an easy solution to that?
We're just going to do the Where's Waldo and try to find him for a whole season around town.
Oh, good point. Who knows?
Pinocchio sightings.
Right.
Again, good point by Jerry in the chat room about whether Snow knows what Cora did or not. Apparently, it was only in the dream scene that that Regina told Snow that her mother killed Daniel. So Snow might not be aware of how dangerous Cora is, truly.
That's true, because she did confide in her as a child and had a good relationship with her. So.
Yeah, so she might actually seduce Snow again.
We'll see if Emma's "I can tell when people are lying to me" thing, you know, works wherever they are. You know, she says she can tell when people are lying, but I don't really think she can, but she says she can.
But according to, again, according to the chat room, right before Snow ate the apple last season, Regina told Snow that Cora ripped Daniel's heart out. So she might be aware of this. But anyway, they need to create a bit of tension between Emma and Snow, and it has to be more like, oh, I'm still getting used to the fact that you're my mom and not my friend, you know? So if one turns evil and the other one stays, and especially Snow, you know, with this whole symbolism of Snow as white as snow and white as the symbol of innocence, and then Snow corrupting, that would be interesting. And it would definitely give Emma a new motivation for something to fight for. And now that now Henry is taken care of by Prince Charming, she needs a new quest in her life. So the quest could be bringing back her mom. Anyway, this is all like heavy speculation. Another question. Let's see. What did I have?
We didn't see Belle this week.
Yeah, maybe. Where's Belle?
With Pinocchio.
She left with Pinocchio?
Oh. Yeah, they're all hanging out somewhere.
Well,
there's a lot of people that we really haven't seen.
Right.
You know, we haven't seen Cinderella, and we haven't seen, you know. So there's a lot of people that are, you know, I'm so sure we're slowly going to be introduced to in their fairy tale world. We haven't seen Jefferson's daughter yet either.
True.
Oh, that's true.
We do see her toys, like in the upside down car.
I love that. Yeah, she had a set in a white rabbit. I was like, yes.
So definitely the Mad Hatter too is a probably a regular that needs his own storyline in this season. What about Rumpel? I mean, he definitely wants to leave Storybrooke to find Bale. How is this going to work? Play out? What is his story going to be? Any ideas? What he's going to do? I mean, it seems like he's made the tour of almost everyone in Storybrooke. So how can they make him interesting?
Here's what I think is going to happen. In the chat room, Inga's bringing it up who sent the postcard to what we think is Bale in New York City. I think it's Pinocchio. And I think Pinocchio is going to kind of lord that over Rumpel. And like, I know where your son is, blah, blah, blah.
That's true, because he did. When he came to town, he seemed to know an awful lot about an awful lot, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Now, didn't you find it interesting that after all of this, Charming goes and makes an exchange with Gold for magic?
Yes.
And that
they strike a deal.
They made a promise to each other. And I thought, oh, goodness.
Well, it's basically...
Talk to them.
it's another kind of watered-down version of freedom. Prince Charming wants to be free of any, you know, meddling of Gold, and Gold doesn't want Prince Charming to interfere in his big master plan. So they basically strike a deal like, you don't bother me, I won't bother you. but it feels like there's something wrong with that type of transaction.
Yeah.
It's a little bit too easy for both of them.
It's going to come back and bite you.
Well, Prince Charming might regret that later on when Rumpel does something really evil and he wants to be Prince Charming, but then he can't because he promised not to interfere. Right. And I'm sure that Rumpel is going to remind him of that.
Right.
And then Rumpel might need Prince Charming later on, and Prince Charming is not able to help him because I promised that I wouldn't interfere in your life. So this is going to end badly. You kind of feel that. It's like striking a deal with the devil. This is never going to benefit any of the parties here. So, I feel that Rumpel is getting a little bit desperate. This is it's been a while since we've seen him this, you know, losing control like this. It's really is like, I want to be free, but I am not. And something else, this spell has power over me, and I thought that I was, you know, all powerful. Hey, what about this mysterious necklace? Did you notice that? That at several times the camera lingers on Regina's necklace, and I don't remember having seen this before. It is a little circular golden
tree in there.
And there's a tree in there. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't notice that.
And if you noticed, when she opened up the book of spells, it was a tree that she blew on to make her powers return.
Oh, very true. And we haven't seen that necklace before.
Her powers returned, her apple tree started to come back to life.
Well, then, and isn't the emblem on the sheriff's badge also a tree? Isn't the tree like the symbol of Storybrooke?
It's the tree of life. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, the tree of life or the tree of with the red apples. It could also be the tree, the portal. You know, the tree, because there's talking about the tree. You know, we need fairy dust so the fairies can enchant another tree as a portal to the enchanted forest. So the tree might also be the symbol of the way back.
That's interesting.
And it's a tree with a beehive under it, in the symbol of the town, says Daniel.
Hmm.
And according to someone else in the chat room, there is a tree in the library hiding the elevator. Oh, it's this big design on the elevator door. So again, well, that's the elevator doors. So there, the tree is definitely the portal. I totally missed that in the finale. That's it. The tree is a symbol for a portal. Huh. Oh. And what could the beehive be? Is there a fairy tale with a beehive? Oh, the one with the bears and the little girl.
I don't know.
That's how I was thinking. Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh, Brer Rabbit. Yeah.
Not any big, well, I mean, Winnie the Pooh, but that's not.
There is a reason for everything. I'm pretty sure that that's why I want to have the DVDs, because I'm sure that there are a lot of clues that I missed in the first season.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway, I'd love to hear people's thought about this. We need to wrap this up because we're at our window. There is an orange line around this podcast that says, do not go beyond 1 hour and 15 minutes. And if we do, we can never go back. And we will lose all our memories of previous episodes. Thank you for joining me today on this episode. I had a lot of fun. And again, I want to invite our listeners, if you want to share in the discussion, either join us live. We are broadcasting this live. And if you want to know when we are going live and you can participate in the chat room, just like many of you did today, follow us on Twitter. We have a specific Twitter account, and it is Once Upon a Time PC. So it is twitter.com/onceuponatimepc, and PC stands for podcast. So whenever we go live to record a show, we will post it there. We'll include a link to the chat room and to the video feed. And of course, you can also participate in the discussion by going to our blog and posting your comments on the episode. And you can find the blog at onceuponatime.sqpn.com. onceuponatime.sqpn.com. And if you go to the blog, you'll also find links to our sponsors, being Bluehost for all your hosting needs, a great service, and also Amazon. Before you shop at Amazon, if you click on that link, on our blog. It will actually benefit us a little bit and help cover the bandwidth and hosting costs. So thank you so much for your support. We will be back next week with another episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.